The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Donald Trump has had a complicated relationship with China. As a candidate, he was very tough on China's economic policies. But Trump himself and the Trump Organization, which is now run by his sons, have made a lot of money doing business with China. Just recently, China approved a number of Trump trademarks that had been held up for years. And Ivanka Trump is involved in a controversy after China's government detained labor activists who were investigating the factory where her line of shoes was made. So the situation of an international business mogul determining foreign policy has raised a lot of questions about potential conflicts of interest. And yet Donald Trump and his family are viewed differently in China than you might expect. My colleague Jiayang Fan has written about the attention that the Trumps have received there. Jiayang, is it fair to say that Donald Trump is not unpopular in China?
China is such a vast country that opinions about Trump and the U.S. really do differ depending on where you are and who you are. But it does seem like a great number of people appreciate Trump's unvarnished hot takes and political incorrectness, as it were. And this might seem strange to us, but for many Chinese, the concept of political correctness, even in big cities, is really quite new. Trump's pretty blatant racist and sexist rhetoric may seem offensive to some of us here in the U.S., but to older Chinese, he can be seen as the only American politician who's not afraid to tell it like it is.
Hmm. So Ivanka Trump is, in fact, sort of a subject of fascination in China. Why is that exactly?
Yes, I mean, Ivanka, or Ivanka, as she's known in China, really has a growing fan base. Since Trump's election, she has been increasingly visible as this golden-haired goddess, I mean, to translate, you know, her title literally, and has come to epitomize female success. There's this expression in China, Cai Mao Shuang Quan, and it means to possess great looks and talents. She is seen as not having had to sacrifice this virtue in exchange for her accomplishments.
Now, I understand you talked recently with some Chinese students in the U.S. about how the cult of Ivanka reflects tensions around the role of women in China. Is that right?
So earlier, I talked to Evelyn Hui, a Chinese student at NYU, who, being a young woman herself, realizes why so many young women in China are enamored of Ivanka and thinks of her as a role model.
Hi, everyone. I'm Ivanka Trump, and I am really, really excited.
She's playing a good role as a woman, as a wife, as mom, as well as, like, she succeeds in her career. So that it seems like she has achieved a balance between work and family. So, yeah.
So I have three kids, and one of them is a newborn, so I get very little sleep, and I don't advocate modeling after that, but I've sort of reconciled myself to the fact that I have so many things I want to do, including spending tons of time with my kids and diving into my work. And,
is that also because she looks the part of someone of kind of the ideal woman? I mean, how do Chinese people also judge her by her appearance?
I think so, yeah. I think everyone judges people by their appearance. And it just seems like because someone's always struggling between your personal and professional life, and she just seems elegant and she seems well in doing both. She seems to be good with whatever she's doing.
So I'll wake up typically around 5:30.
Wow.
Maybe a little bit earlier, and I'll meditate for a few minutes. Then I shower and I put on my makeup. I don't do my hair because I don't know.
It's interesting that Evelyn notes that Ivanka doesn't seem anxious or pressured because there is so much pressure on Evelyn and her generation. Evelyn is a beneficiary of the one-child policy in that her parents have devoted all these resources to allow her to go to these expensive and prestigious schools. But even before she graduates, she's placed on this assembly line where she's expected to repackage herself as the ideal wife and mother.
It's weird because people, like women with higher education, like people with probably have a diploma of like master degree or a PhD, they're discriminated in the marriage market.
Tell me more about that. Why are they discriminated in the marriage market?
Because men would feel like they can't handle girls like that. Because whenever you start a family, the women are expected to fill the caregiving role, and the man would be like the, what's that called? The bread earning?
The breadwinner, yes.
The breadwinner, right? And then, so like, there's a subtle balance in between the two. And the woman with higher education would feel like maybe they're underrepresented. There will be conflicts, and the men would know that. So like, they prefer to have somebody that's not that highly educated, but someone who can play the role of the wife well, then that's enough.
In fact, there's so much pressure in China to find a husband that there was even an ad made by a cosmetics company that went viral in China about how much parents pressure their daughters to find a husband. The ad itself shows how excruciating the parents' expectations are.
The ideal age for a woman is definitely before 30. If you're you haven't found someone that you think you can have a family with, then you're considered abnormal in that sense, like you are leftover.
Tell me a little bit more. What is a leftover woman?
A leftover woman is those that, like, they're definitely above 25. Maybe they're in their 30s, but haven't found anyone yet in their life.
Do women feel, a woman who, like me, if she's 32 and still single, in China, how would other people regard her?
People would gossip a lot, definitely. People would just like chatting around, like people would just say, oh, what's wrong with that girl? Like, look at her. And then they would educate their child, like, oh, don't do PhDs. Look at that, like that girl, like she's good. She's so good at her career, but she's still not married. She's still single.
These values are a really important part of Chinese culture. They're largely passed down from Confucius, the father of Chinese culture, who really understood society as sculpted by patriarchy. In fact, when I talked to a young feminist activist in China, Xiaowen Liang, she talked about how hard they are to resist and how much they are a part of her world.
There's a Confucian teaching that women have three obedience. Like women should obey their fathers as daughter, obey their husbands as wives, obey their sons when their husbands are dead.
And do you think those values are still very relevant today?
Actually, like in the 60s and 70s, the country encouraged women not to get married so early. They said that women could spend more time to devote themselves to, like, building
the country. The 60s and 70s were a time of great upheaval in China. This was the period of the Cultural Revolution when Mao led the entire country in rejecting ancient Chinese culture, most emphatically Confucian teachings.
Mm-hmm.
Mao famously said that women hold up half the sky. And this was considered very, very new and novel at the time, that women can be half of anything or equal to men. In China, the problem has always been implementation of these rules at the local level, where traditions, especially ancient traditions, are still very strong.
I feel like it's more like today, it's harder and harder for people to find a job. So people feel like, it's so difficult for both men and women to find a job. Then what, like women can just go home to be a stay-home mom to take care of the family so that men will be easier to find a job.
That's fascinating. So is the thought that if more women remained in the domestic sphere and took care of their families, then the available jobs would go to men and that should be the natural order of things?
Some people would say that. Those people are supporters of reviving the Confucianism ideas.
Xiaowen's organization walks a very fine and precarious line. On the one hand, the government does allow them to fight gender discrimination in businesses because that cause is seen as quite apolitical. On the other hand, when Xiaowen's organization does work that bleeds into the political or is seen as bleeding into the political, it can be seen as very dangerous and destabilizing for the state.
In 2015, five of my colleagues were detained for 37 days because they planned to carry out an activity on anti-sexual harassment on public transportation.
Why were they detained?
The police detained them in the name of causing public disturbance.
What do your parents think about your involvement?
Right after I graduated from college, they pushed me to date men because they think that feminism will turn me into a lesbian. Well, I would say that what they're afraid is reasonable. But they were very supportive at first because newspapers reported our activities and they think that it might be something good. But then the police started to go to my parents and told them that I was involved in some very dangerous activities. The police once even talked to my father's employer about my job. So I felt a lot of pressure, both from the police and my parents. So I decided maybe I should leave China for a while. That's why I came here.
I mean, what sort of things would the police say to your dad or your dad's employer?
First, they said that what I did fighting for women's rights, it's good. The police, they said it's good. But the way we were doing it is wrong because we were using Western ways to fight for rights.
Do they believe that grassroots organization is inherently Western?
I think this is a way of shifting what's really important to solve. Like, women are suffering from domestic violence. Like, women are discriminated in workplace, in education, and everything. And once people who are from the bottom, who are from the civil society, try to address this issue, the government started to say that what you have been doing is being influenced by Western hostile forces. Once the government starting to use this argument, people, especially nationalists, they will stand with the government and try to attack feminists.
And here we come to this really interesting paradox. On the one hand, China wants to modernize and embrace change, and that's very apparent in China's economy. On the other hand, the Chinese government doesn't want social norms and individual liberty to be embraced too rapidly. And when it comes to the role of woman, we really see that tension. In most Western media stories, we see Chinese people and the Chinese government as butting heads, that they oftentimes do not agree on a variety of issues. But here, the government and the citizens are on the same page. They share that ambivalence about where they're going, and there is a great sense that they want to keep China together while moving forward. And the question is how exactly to do that.
That's Jiayang Fan, my colleague at The New Yorker. She spoke with Evelyn Hui and Xiaowen Liang, two students studying in New York. You can find all of Jiayang's work for The New Yorker and mine at newyorkerradio.org.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.